again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network, and hopefully we can add a little historical context to them, too. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined, as always, by my co-host Roman Gomez. And this is proper episode number 12, and in this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode that was taped on Wednesday, March 24th, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets on Saturday, March 27th, 1982. If you like this show and want more things related to it, you can find them on all of our social media platforms, and we really do have all of it, but we update Twitter and Facebook the most. Just search Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. Two of our more popular features are On This Day in JCP TV History and hashtag Everyday Arn, where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that was Jim Crockett Promotions Television, as well as the greatness that is the enforcer AA Arn Anderson. And if you want to follow along with us as we review episodes of the show, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWE.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com, our friends over there. And now, without any further ado, let me invite in my friend right here, co-host of the show, Roman Gomez. And Roman, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing good, Mike, and it's kind of crazy how much things have changed. I mean, for a little while, we were kind of struggling getting together with your work schedule and my schedule and stuff you had going on in your life and my life. And now, I mean, we have something called Everyday Arn. We might have something called Everyday Mid-Atlantic. Seems like we're going to be recording these episodes at a fast and furious pace.
Yeah, we are really getting back onto schedule here. And for anybody that's listening to this in real time, we got episodes number 10 and 11 up rather quickly. We were able to get number 12 up rather quickly as well, too, and get back onto schedule because of all of this coronavirus stuff we have going on. And we're up now to, as I mentioned, March 27th, Saturday, March 27th, 1982. And the introduction to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling this week is done by Bob Caudle and Sandy Scott, making another appearance back into the area on TV. This episode of the show does not have the heavy overdub of music, which drags long into the opening, which was nice. And what was also nice was we got an extended interview set to begin the show, and there were some heavy hitters to begin it, Sergeant Slaughter being one of them. And we talked about Sergeant Slaughter a little bit last week, Roman, becoming a more of a central figure on the programming, which he has not been for a while. He's been out there on the arena shows defending the U.S. title, been on Worldwide Wrestling. But when it comes to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, he had kind of taken a back seat as this NWA title tournament was going on. And Ricky Steamboat and Austin Idol and Ivan Koloff and Jimmy Valiant and some other people were getting their shine on the program. But as we start off this episode of the show, we know right where we stand with everything, and Sergeant Slaughter knows right where he stands with the NWA and running afoul of them.
All over and keeping my eye on them, and we're winding it down. We got some top teams, and we're coming down to the finals, and it's going to be pretty soon.
We're going to have a lot more about that next week.
Next
also,
week,
right?
Yeah, we'll bring them all up to date on it next week. Also, I have a situation here with Sergeant Slaughter jumping into a match with Jake Roberts last week, and he's going to be fined $500.
Ooh, boy, that's going to hurt him right in the pocketbook, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, some of these guys think that they can go out and ride the NWA. Well, they're not going to do it.
Well, Tandy, I tell you, you know, once before you had to come in and bring a little law and order back, and I think it's time for that to happen again.
Well, we're going to put these guys in their place one way or another, fine them, suspend them, and they better understand it right now.
All right, and also, what about Ric Flair? Now, Ric Flair is going to be back, right?
Yes, Ric Flair, you know, is still the world's heavyweight champion, traveling all over the world, and he is going to be back in the area.
All right, and Sandy, speaking of Sergeant Slaughter, I tell you, Sergeant Slaughter is going to have... he's going to have his hands full. He's going to have his hands more than full because Ric Flair has said some things about Sergeant Slaughter, right?
He sure has, Bob, and I believe you have a piece of film on that.
We do, and fans, right now, let's listen to this from Ric Flair.
You know, I'm sure that Ole Anderson and Slaughter and Piper thought that Ric Flair was gone. I'm talking about the night that Anderson jumped on me in New Orleans, put a few stitches in my head, and he did his damnedest to eliminate me from the heavyweight picture. In other words, to remove me from this. Well, you got your wish, Ole Anderson, because I'm taking the world belt and I'm putting it aside. I'm forgetting all about being the world champion. It's what I wanted more than anything else in the world about 6 months ago. But now I want Slaughter, and I want Ole Anderson. I want Piper. I want tag matches, six mans. It makes no difference. I want you all in the ring at one time. And with friends like Rick Steamboat and Jake Roberts and Youngblood, I know that my wishes are going to come true. And you think about it long and hard, Ole. We went round and round last summer, but evidently you didn't get the message. And the only thing that's going to bring satisfaction to my heart right now is to eliminate, and I mean eliminate, hurt, hospitalize, Ole Anderson, Slaughter, Piper, anybody that gets in our way. You guys owe me some dues. And with the help of Roberts and Steamboat and all my friends, I'm going to see. And I'm promising the people out there that Ric Flair is going to get the job done. Woo!
All right, and here's a man that Ric Flair was just talking about, of course, Sergeant Slaughter.
We all heard what Ric Flair had to say. Why does he come out here in person and say it? He has to make a videotape. That's how scared he is of me. And I understand that you have fined me $500. Well, I understand that I'll have to pay the fine, and I don't care because it was worth it. Jake Roberts, you deserved everything you got, and I'm going to do the same thing to Steamboat. I'm going to do the same thing again to you and to Ric Flair. How do you like that?
If you do, you'll find yourself someplace else.
What do you mean I'll find myself?
Well, you may even be stripped of that belt. That's none of your business in other matches.
I'll do what I want around here. Listen to me, Sandy Scott. $500 is nothing to me. I drive around in limousines. You understand me, Sandy Scott?
All right, you heard Sandy. He said you may find yourself without a belt. That's also, right. You may find yourself without a lot more money.
You just bring those guys on. I'll face them face to face.
All right, fans. That's it with Ric Flair, Sergeant Slaughter. As we say, great matches for you. We're going to see a tag team match featuring Jake Roberts, Blackjack Mulligan Jr., Jimmy Valiant, the exciting man's going to be here, former world champion Jack Briscoe.
There you hear the introduction of the show with Bob Cottle and troubleshooting NWA official Sandy Scott back to jaw with Sergeant Slaughter. Remember that from about a month or so ago. Sergeant Slaughter and Sandy Scott going at it. Sandy Scott threatening to strip him of his title. Once again, threatening to strip him of his title. Sergeant Slaughter not being fazed by the fines being thrown by Sandy Scott and the NWA at him. All this boils down to is Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter wanting to go at each other. You heard from Ric Flair. A very interesting way to start the show this week, I thought.
Yeah, that was a lot to digest there. I thought $500 was a very reasonable amount, a believable amount, to fine somebody for their actions. I thought it would have been good, too, if they had actually shown that clip again of Slaughter interfering in Jake, you know, while they were talking about it. I thought that would have been a good idea to do that. But, you know, I thought it was neat that Slaughter said he would pay the $500, but he would do the same thing to Flair and Steamboat if given the chance. And Sandy Scott, he laid down the law. He said, if you do it, I'll strip you of the title. And every territory, every promotion, every league has always preached the importance of being a champion means that you get paid more. So if the $500 wasn't enough to deter Slaughter from his actions, taking the title, that would mean taking a lot more money from Slaughter, and maybe that would make him shape up a little bit.
Absolutely. All the prestige, everything he's got, those limos he rides around in, he gets to do so because of the money he gets as the champion, as the share of the winner's purse, big balling out there, Sergeant Slaughter. And if you don't have that, what do you have? And if you can't respect the title, what do you have if you're a promotion? And that's one thing that over the years, those titles became trinkets. They became, what was the infamous term? Props, I believe it was. But this was a time where these championships actually meant something, and Sergeant Slaughter really did care about that U.S. championship the same way that Ric Flair really loved being the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. We talked about on the last show how things were leading into Charlotte. Later on during the results, we'll talk about how some things are leading into Greensboro as well. What was also interesting to me in this interview, Roman, was Ric Flair talking about the fact that Ole Anderson had jumped on him in New Orleans. As you remember last week when he was cutting the interview from Florida, he had talked about Ole Anderson coming down to, I believe it was either Miami or Tampa. I believe it may have been Miami, and jumping on his head there and putting 11 stitches in his eye, 13 in his forehead, and breaking a finger. So a little bit of continuity issues with Ric Flair there in that interview, but certainly something that I'm assuming that everybody back in the day just kind of hand-waved as long as they knew they were going to see Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter in the same ring.
Yeah, and then we have the benefit of watching these a lot quicker. You know, back then it would be from week to week, but now, courtesy of the network or courtesy of the DVDs, we can watch one episode and then 15 minutes later watch the next episode. So astute point on your part, but like you said, back then, you know, from one week to another, people might have forgot the fact, you know, all the number of stitches Flair had or all the bandages on his face. They might have just kind of swept that under the rug.
Plus, what they couldn't do is cross-reference anything. There was no the history of WWE.com or the Clawmasters archives or Mark Easteridge or anybody else out there finding these results and placing them up there so we can figure out if Ole Anderson, hey, wait, there's no way he could have been in New Orleans that night. But all of that aside, we get to the matches after we take a short break, and our referee for the day, Sonny Fargo, in his beautiful yellow sunshiny pantsuit outfit that he has, his official, was that an official NWA referee? Did that come from the National Wrestling Alliance? Was that a sanctioned jumpsuit that he would have on, that yellow one?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I actually put that in my notes about his yellow outfit. It was almost like he was a fan of the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates, the We Are Family Pirates, with that mustard yellow pants and mustard yellow shirt. It was quite the eyesore to look at.
As somebody who grew up a Baltimore Oriole fan, let's never mention that one again. As we move to our first match, which was refereed by Sonny Fargo, Pretty Boy. I almost said the King, but he wasn't the King here. He was Pretty Boy Carl Fergie, alongside Big Mike Miller, trading in one hoss for another. David Patterson last week, Mike Miller this week against Blackjack Mulligan Jr., Jake the Snake Roberts. Sandy Scott is still out there on commentary. A bunch of hossing about here. Most interesting thing here to me is that Austin Idol comes out with his 8mm camera, which of course gets Bob Caudle's attention, and he asks troubleshooting NWA official Sandy Scott about Austin Idol being out there, and probably to the disappointment of lots of people out there that wanted to see Austin Idol get run off the set, Sandy Scott mentions that everything with Idol is on the up and up.
Mulligan Jr. back into the ropes, and they're going to roll right down the ropes and now into the corner.
You see Austin Idol's out there taking film.
Sandy, Austin has been doing this now for several weeks, and he has really been upsetting some of the guys.
Well, it's perfect legal what he's doing.
He is in taking some kind of picture, some kind of film. He says, I think it's 8mm. And Idol, I think, has really got him sort of spooked.
Well, I think he's doing his homework. I think he's taking the film, going home and studying him of different people.
There you hear that everything is A-OK from Sandy Scott's point of view when it comes to being out there and scouting your opponents. And this was a relatively long match. It went about 6.5 minutes. A lot of back and forth, but nothing that would make you think that Mulligan Jr. and Roberts weren't going to win the match. Cottle, it gave him a time to talk about hearing from Ric Flair and talking about that being a welcome thing. And obviously Sergeant Slaughter's name was brought up several times as he was kind of the focal point of the show. It also allowed them to talk about Jimmy Valiant having some success in the area and his star continuing to rise and him mixing it up with Ivan Koloff. So, Roman, before I play the end of the match here, do you have any thoughts on really anything that took place, as this was mostly a showcase for Jake Roberts and Blackjack Mulligan Jr.?
No, I just noted that, you know, the crowd really got behind Jake when he was getting worked over. I mean, it was obvious to you and me that Jake and Mulligan Jr. or Wyndham was going to win this contest, but crowd really got into it for something that would be considered, for the most part, a squash match.
Now go ahead and play the end of the match here, where Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jake Roberts pull off somewhat of a double team on Big Mike Miller to get the pinfall victory.
Again off of the ropes, and again with that hard right elbow. And here's Roberts getting with a knee lift. Jake Roberts with that tremendous knee lift of his, hooks that leg to count of three. It's all over right there. Just no way that anybody's going to get up from that tremendous knee lift of Jake Roberts.
That's a good win for them.
A great win, and watch it right here in slow motion, fans. Here's that big right forearm from Mulligan Jr. After the tag, you're going to see Roberts come in with that tremendous knee lift.
Now, really, what this finish was, if anybody remembers Barry Windham from his 80s prime and Jim Crockett Promotions, 86-87, facing off against Ric Flair, you would remember he would do that move where he'd throw the guy off the ropes, he'd bound backwards, come out, he'd lariat the guy, he'd seemingly do like three rotations in the air, just kind of floating there, and then he'd hit the ground, go over and pin the guy. Well, he was still working on that in 1982. This was a version of it there where he whipped Mike Miller off of the ropes and ended up catching him with a forearm. It kind of looked like a fist at first until you saw it on the replay. Then went and tagged Jake the Snake Roberts. Roberts hit that knee lift, which you heard, and finished the job in about 6.5 minutes there. It was a late bell, which happened more than once on this show. From that point, Mulligan Jr. and Roberts went over and joined Bob Cottle. Cut a promo, obviously centering around Sergeant Slaughter. Mulligan Jr. had his problems with Slaughter at the end of 1981 and into 1982, and now Jake Roberts having his issues with him as well. From there, we had a video package of the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant. And I don't know what the original song was that aired over this. I don't know if it was Boy from New York City. I don't know if it was Son of a Gypsy. I don't know what it was. It was definitely not Life's Been Good. That's a completely different video here. But this is one of the several videos where Jimmy Valiant has touched down at an airport, made his way out of the airplane. In this one, he strolls through the airport, lights up a cigar as people look at him from afar, strolls outside, and meets a bunch of people there to meet him. He's packing a dip while wearing a crown, while leading a crew of bikers who all seem to be on a boardwalk. There's weird music playing because it's the overdub, which makes this whole visual look and sound just even more insane than it actually originally was. Just completely nuts. This ends up leading to Jimmy Valiant coming out for his match against Bill White. The music never stops. This overdub is like torture, just torturously long. Thankfully, the match wasn't. It went about a minute 50, and he hit the elbows, the one back elbow, then the elbow drop to get the pin there. Then the damn music plays again. Roman, this was almost as surreal as everybody being locked down with the coronavirus. Was a video that was already bat-ass nuts to begin with because it was with the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, complete with this ridiculous overdub, and then with just this ridiculous cast of characters he had around him as he wore this oversized crown and just used several forms of tobacco.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure of what the point of this video was, to be honest. If it was just to show you how popular Jimmy was by having a crowd of people meet him at the airport. Him wearing the crown, for those of you that may or may not know, in Memphis, when he was part of Jimmy Hart's family, he was claiming that he was the king of wrestling. So that's why the crown was on there. And in that video package, they even showed a little highlight of him beating up Dr. D. David Schultz in a tag match where Schultz was with Condry. But it was just kind of weird. And then the visual of him with a crown on a motorcycle, and the motorcycle had three wheels. And if you watch the video, I think my four-year-old nephew could have rode that motorcycle. So I don't know how cool that made Jimmy look by riding on a motorcycle that had three wheels. And it was just a very unusual video. I'm still not sure what the purpose of it was.
Well, especially too, because it seemed like somewhat of a ride, like, on the boardwalk. One, it looked like it was at the boardwalk for a minute, but then they just, you know, the video starts where they're leaving the airport, and then they show them driving back up to the airport again, and then, like, getting off, as if it was like, all right, thanks, everybody, for letting me drive around on your three-wheel motorcycle. High five, I'm out of here with my big-ass crown now. And that was a thing, too. Jimmy Valiant had been in Mid-Atlantic in early 1981, coming over as part of that King James thing, and he was managed by Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and it just didn't fly. He went back to Memphis, didn't work. Then he came back in this incarnation a couple months ago as the Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant. So I don't know when this thing was filmed. I don't know if this was in Memphis. At one time was Memphis only. I have no idea what the hell was going on there. And I don't think anybody else knew what the hell was going on there. And who knows if Jimmy Valiant at that point, God knows, and the people around him, who knows if they knew what was going on at that time. But that's what that was. And then we were on to a battle of... Roman, we have talked for the last couple of weeks. It seems to be that of enhancement talent guys, when we started, we got a lot of Buddy Landell. We got a lot of... Who'd we get a lot of there at the very initial start of this show? We had a couple of pasty dudes, but then we started getting into the Hoss territory, our big Mike Millers, and in the last couple of weeks, Ron Ritchie and David Patterson have popped up a lot, and we've ended up talking about them probably way too much. Thankfully, a lot of the listeners won't have to hear that, as I've cut a lot of that out of the last couple of shows, but here we go with Ron Ritchie and David Patterson in a battle, and... You know, we'll talk about what happens as the match goes on, but I got to be honest, I had to let off an audible laugh when I saw Ritchie and Patterson was going to be our next match.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising the way they went, but I'll admit, the match kind of surprised me. It was a little bit better than I thought. You know, I was back and forth, and they had some decent action, and I don't want to spoil the result in case you had a clip of it, but I was just kind of surprised.
Yeah, you know, Bob Cottle, this match gave him a chance to remind us that Jack Briscoe was coming up, I guess just to let us know that, hey, we got Ron Ritchie and David Patterson here, but don't worry, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion is coming up, so don't turn the channel. He also mentioned that next week they'll have more info on the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament as well, too, which was also mentioned at the beginning of the show. Cottle also talks about Sergeant Slaughter's situation with Sandy Scott and with Jake Roberts and all that stuff going on. Sandy then rejoins Bob on commentary to talk a little bit about the match. And once again, once Sandy gets back on, he gives Bob a chance to ask him directly about Sergeant Slaughter and some of his actions, and even more so, his attitude, which has dramatically gotten worse.
And Richie gets a foot right in. Sandy, I tell you, these two guys have really been at it since the opening bell.
Sure have been.
I just mentioned, too, just a moment ago about how upset Sergeant Slaughter was about being fined $500 and the fact that you had told him he's gonna be a lot lighter than that in his wallet if he doesn't clean his act up a little bit, Sandy. But Slaughter seems to be like he really doesn't care, Sandy. When you mention guys like Ric Flair to him, when you mention guys like Jake Roberts, it's like he doesn't see money. He doesn't see anything. You know, the money doesn't mean that to him.
Well, you know, if he's not wrestling and making the money, then I wonder how he would feel.
That's a pretty good point. That's right.
Seems that he comes in and he wants to dominate everything and break all the rules and do as he pleases. Well, that's not the way it's going to be. The NWA has set down rules, and they're going to follow them.
Sandy, I tell you another thing. I know all the fans appreciate that, and I know they're glad you're here, and they know, and they're really glad that you're gonna sort of put a little law and order back into the situation right now.
Well, we're still going to try.
The match was going on for a long time at this point, and I was wondering, hey, man, this is kind of a surprise here with a lot of this back and forth with Patterson really, you know, pouring on the advantage and Ritchie valiantly fighting back. But, man, is this thing ever going to end? And it ended, but it was a very old school way of doing things, something you rarely see, if at all, on TV anymore.
These two men have taken a tremendous amount of punishment. They have really been going all out since the opening bell. And again, Patterson just manages to kick out at the count of two. And time has expired. There's the bell. Time in the match has expired. It's going to be a draw, and I tell you, I feel pretty good about that. It was going to be bad for either one of these guys to lose this match.
Well, you can bet your bottom dollar they'll be back at each other.
Just a tremendous amount of action this match right here. A number of times each managed to kick out. Ron Ritchie, David Patterson. Each time it appeared the other was going to be pinned, he managed just to get free. A tremendous match and a whale of a lot of action ending in a draw.
There you hear it. A very good match. Surprisingly going long. Why they go long? Because they were going to a draw, a 10-minute draw on TV, something you rarely, like I said, if ever see anymore. Now, the 10-minute draw was actually about 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Yes, I counted because I always want to get an estimation on the time of the matches. So didn't go the full 10, didn't matter, didn't have to. It gave Bob and Sandy a lot of time to tell stories and to move some things forward on the show and give Ron Ritchie and David Patterson a chance to go at each other and show the fans that, you know what, they're a step up from your Steve Seiberts and Bill Millers and all those guys. They're a step up from that, and they're about on even footing right now, still trying to break through to the top. What'd you think about how they decided to play this one in the match itself?
Well, my thought was, Ritchie can't beat Patterson, who is he going to beat? And vice versa. You know, I thought this would have been a decent chance to maybe try to elevate one of them a little bit by showing them get a victory on TV. That way, when they are wrestling a top star, you know, it'll be kind of fresh in their fans' minds that they have seen a win before. But I don't think anybody's ever seen either one of these two win. And neither one could beat the other. And I was just kind of surprised that in a show that takeout commercials only goes 42 minutes, they basically spent 25 minutes of the show just on this match. And what did it prove? You know, it didn't further a storyline, didn't have a major angle. And to spend 25% of your show on one match with two enhancement talents where nobody got a victory, I just didn't see the point.
Well, I think probably the way they're looking at it at this point is they're more than just enhancement talents. You know, you look at Don Gilbert or Tony Anthony at this point, they're just young boys. They're guys getting beat up. They are enhancement talents, the Bill Whites of the world and guys like that. And Ritchie, who he did get a win a couple of weeks ago, and he's, you know, came back into the area with a little bit more experience. So Patterson teamed with Carl Fergie last week in a match where, you know, Johnny Weaver was talking about him, possibly those two going after the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship. They did bring up Jack Briscoe coming up later on and really, again, focusing on Sergeant Slaughter, who was the whole center point of the show. So I dig what you're saying, but I disagree with you a little bit there, just, you know, the perception on how I see it. But bottom line, 10-minute draw on TV was a rarity. You know, became a rarity. It happened a little bit more back in the day, but even then, it didn't happen all that often. And when it did, it was usually between two guys that were usually lower on the totem pole. You rarely got the superstars to go to a draw with somebody, but that's also because most of the time the superstars weren't on TV. But we did get some superstars coming up for our Superfecta interview of the day, and it doesn't get any better than this, and they needed this too, especially after going and having a 10-minute draw of a match with Ron Ritchie and David Patterson. You got to give me something, and they definitely gave us something when Austin Idol, Ivan Koloff, Sergeant Slaughter, and Ole Anderson rolled out to do some interviews.
Austin Idol, and Austin, boy, some of the wrestlers are really getting upset, particularly earlier, Blackjack Mulligan and this Jake Roberts, they really got upset at this.
It's just like I said, Jackson, I know why they're upset, because they're jealous. They're all jealous here. They're all eaten up with envy. As a matter of fact, they're green with envy because they didn't have the mind of Einstein like Austin Idol's got, because they couldn't come up with the idea, because they don't do their homework, because they're not as hungry as the idlers. I said it before here, I'm going to say it again, and one time only. Sooner or later, Jackson, it's all going to boil down to one person, the ultimate man in wrestling. And as you're looking at him right here, Austin Idol, truly the universal heartthrob, 242 pounds, Las Vegas, Nevada, too hot to handle.
Austin Idol, right here, the Russian Bear, Ivan
I want Kolo. To know how come this valiant, he is still wrestling. How come he hasn't been suspended? I have demanded that he be suspended for his type of wrestling. Punching and kicking, eye gouging. He is a street fighter, and he is crazy that. He should be put in, what do you call, asylum, in straitjacket. He should not be allowed to wrestle.
Are you afraid of
Jimmy? Of course I'm not afraid of him. I am a Russian. I am a proud Russian. The TV champion, and I intend on keeping my belt, but this man is crazy, and I'm going to do something to get rid of you, Vanny.
All right, Ole Anderson right here.
You know, I listened a few seconds ago out here. People are going, Flair, Steamboat, Steamboat, Roberts. There's only one thing that I see out of all this. They're all just a little bit afraid. Where in the world is Roberts? Gutless. Where is Flair? Gutless. He has to have a film. Where's Steamboat? Nowhere around. You think we're going to worry about him?
That's right.
You look real scared.
We got Stan Hansen just shaking in the back. We got Stan Hansen. That's why we are not scared. And for that $500 fine, there's going
to
be a lot of blood flying. There's going to be a lot of bones cracked. And for every dollar that I have to spend out, there's going to be somebody hurt.
Now you hear the superfecto of promos. It doesn't get much better than that unless you add in Roddy Piper, but then you'd have to take somebody out. So forget about that. Just add him to the mix. Don't sub anybody. Austin Idol, Ivan Koloff, Sergeant Slaughter, Ole Anderson, another incredible lineup of Jaws Jack in theirs. Any thoughts on that crew there, including Austin Idol really feeling himself at the start?
Yeah, Idol was good putting himself over, and I thought it was kind of funny when Ivan said that Jimmy Valiant ought to be fit for a straitjacket for all his interfering and everything. And if that's not cause for a straitjacket, the visual of him wearing a crown on a motorcycle, maybe that should be a reason to put him in a straitjacket. But yeah, I thought it was a good trifecta of interviews that they had there.
Then it was time for that former NWA World Heavyweight Champion Jack Briscoe to face off against Steve Seibert. I invoked his name a little bit earlier on. It was Briscoe and Seibert time. And funny that when Jack Briscoe was out there and actually in the ring, there was somebody who came out that wanted to take a little bit of a closer look. But it wasn't Austin Idol.
Fireman's takedown right there by Briscoe. Just quick as lightning.
That's true. And him and his brother, one of the top tag teams in the country. And they were also at the World Tag Team Championship.
Another fireman's takedown. Uh-oh. I got to tell you, I just noticed somebody walking into the studio right here and watching Jack Briscoe very closely in the ring up there. None other than Roddy Piper. And I don't know.
None other. I like the rules that you have there.
I tell you, I noticed that you're getting an eyeful because you're looking at a tremendous athlete and a great wrestler up there in Jack Briscoe.
Well,
and you've got to be impressed, Piper.
You know, being a legend myself, I wanted to come out here and take a look at Mr. Briscoe, who himself is a legend. You know, it's kind of like Muhammad Ali watching Joe Frazier or Joe Buckner. And I just wanted to see what this Briscoe has that people say that are so tremendous. You know, being a legend, you've got to live up to certain expectations. And I just would like to see what old Jack got here, you see, because old Roddy, he knows what to do. And I'd like to see if Jack knows what to do.
Just watch him in that ring. You're going to see. You're really going to see something. You're going to get an eyeful of Jack Briscoe.
Well, an eyeful of Jack Briscoe. Well, my goodness. That's nice. Let's see what he can do. Nice move. Nice move.
If you were perfectly honest about it,
I always am perfectly honest. So let's clear that up.
You'd have to tell the fans how impressed you are with Jack Briscoe.
If I'm being perfectly honest, which I always am perfectly honest. Now, figure four. You see, there's supposed to be nobody's ever been able to break that. Did he win?
He didn't. You saw right there where the referee said, "Ring that bell."
Well,
with that figure four.
Being perfectly honest. Bravo.
I think he got caught with a little egg on his face there, didn't he?
I think so too, Sandy. And I tell you, he said, bravo, bravo, as he walks out in slow motion right here with that figure four. When Briscoe gets it on, nobody's going
to
get out of that.
Oh,
it's
I
all
to
over
say,
right here.
If he gets into it with Briscoe, he's going to know he's been into a fight.
All right, there you have the winner, Jack Briscoe.
And there you hear Jack Briscoe defeat Steve Seibert, and you heard the entirety of the match. 2 minutes is all it took, almost on the nose, for Jack Briscoe to make Steve Seibert submit to the figure four leg lock. It also did not take much time for Roddy Piper to literally exit stage left, ducking out of the door as Jack Briscoe stared him down from the ring. and was wondering what was going to be Roddy Piper's next thing. Roddy Piper, Jack Briscoe, here is the start of what is a legendary feud, an incredibly entertaining feud, a wildly physical feud. Good stuff is on the horizon here, and here we see the first signs of it as Roddy Piper goes out and takes a long look at Jack Briscoe.
So Piper came out on commentary to see what Jack Briscoe can do, but he didn't get to see him do a whole bunch as the match was pretty short, like you said, about 2 minutes. And, Briscoe's impressive as usual and finished everything off with the figure four.
Now we go from a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion to something that relates to Sergeant Slaughter. Yes, we're going to take another close look at Sergeant Slaughter's privates. Yep, those two things just jiggling about there, Carnoodle and Nelson. They face off against Tony Anthony and Mike George. Now, it has been mentioned that Rod Ritchie has taken Sergeant Slaughter to task, and in fact, they had a match or two. They had a match last week. I believe they may have had a match a couple weeks before that, but before Ron Ritchie came out and had some words about Sergeant Slaughter, Mike George came into the area with something to say about Slaughter. And obviously, we're not watching worldwide wrestling. From reading the results from around the region, we knew Mike George was active, but on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, he has been invisible for several weeks, so him popping back up is very interesting, and it should be noted that earlier on in the show, while Sergeant Slaughter was cutting one of his interviews, he did point out that Mike George had been running his mouth, and he had something waiting for him in the same way that he had something waiting for Jake Roberts for running his mouth. And we see that all kind of come together in this match. I'll throw it right to Bob Cottle now, who talks about a pulled punch by Mike George would set up Sergeant Slaughter to stop back by and give some of his comments.
Of course, the longer you get to, the longer you're going to be able to improve.
Well, I tell you right there, I think Mike George made a big mistake. Tony Anthony had Canole, he had his arms behind him. George had that right hand cocked and loaded, and he didn't let it go, Sandy. You don't let those guys out of situations like that very often and expect to beat them.
Well, when you got guys like Mike George and Tony Anthony in there, sometimes they like to do it the right way. They can take the opportunity and hit you with a punch, but I think they'd rather wrestle you down, Bob.
Let's ask this man right here, Sergeant Slaughter, who is just moved right here at ringside, about these two privates up there.
Yeah, well, Sandy Scott, that's why these other guys aren't winners. That's why Private Nelson and Private Canoodle are winners, because they get down and they get dirty and they keep on you. Look at the hole he's got on there now. There's no way he's going anyplace. He's just waiting to make his move here, as you'll see. Always thinking. Watch this, Bob Cottle.
Tremendous elbow as Anthony comes off of the ropes.
I have those boys running into brick walls every day.
Watch
elbow.
This. Right here, he's going to hold him up for that clothesline off that top rope. Oh, vicious blow right
love
there.
It. I'll be up there raising their hand, I think, after that one.
Sandy, that's a vicious blow. Nobody gets up from that. The guy is just defenseless as Nelson holds him up in the air and Canoodle off of the top rope with that clothesline.
Coming down with all his weight.
Oh!
And here is Slaughter and George going at it. Now all three of them are after George. Canoodle and Nelson are holding him, and Slaughter looked like he took a buckle off or something off of his belt. And he just pounds away now. Mike George. Here comes Jake Roberts. Roberts got Slaughter. He's got him down on the mat, just choking him.
Oh, here comes Briscoe and Mulligan Jr.
Mulligan Jr., Briscoe, we got a ring full right now. Chaos in the ring. Jack Briscoe, Blackjack Mulligan Jr., Jake Roberts, all came in to rescue Mike George and Tony Anthony from Sergeant Slaughter and his two privates.
But there you hear all hell break loose. The privates get the victory over Tony Anthony and Mike George. Sergeant Slaughter jumps in the ring. He and the privates attack George. There was some good stuff during this match, including Don Carnoodle.
I'm not going to say that it was Kazuchika Okada level, all right? I'm not going to say that it was Soul Man Rocky Johnson level, okay? But what I am going to say is Don Carnoodle threw a hell of a dropkick that just blasted Tony Anthony right in the face. This was almost as good as Coco Beware doing it to, I think it was Gustavo Mendoza at the beginning of the UWF shows.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to that level, but just so pretty. It was a beautiful textbook dropkick. There were a couple of moments like that during this match. I mean, Mike George, we talk about him being very meat and potatoes, being perfect for a perfect guy for the old tri-state promotion and a perfect guy for Central States, but he was very solid. Very, very good. Tony Anthony, you could see, had a spark of a worker. Obviously, Carnoodle had been around for a long time. Nelson was coming along quite well. They were gelling as a team. There was some good stuff in the 5.5 minutes of the match taking place. And plus, we got to see them tie something together. I mean, they could have left Mike George out there in the open. They could have used anybody in this match, but they had tied in, you know, Mike George talking trash about Sergeant Slaughter weeks ago. And they made it happen, and they tied it into a situation here on this show that also included where Slaughter was going with Jake Roberts. And I just thought some really good stuff all around here, Roman.
Yeah, I thought they did a real good job of foreshadowing early on when Slaughter came out with Sandy Scott and he got fined the $500. He basically was not concerned about it. You know, he said he would pay any fine. At one point during the telecast, he said, for every dollar he has to pay, somebody's going to get hurt. And during this tag match, when Slaughter was on commentary, he made a comment, said Mike George should not even be in the Mid-Atlantic area. So you kind of knew Slaughter's fuse was lit a little bit. And if you paid attention to the clues, you kind of figured something would happen. But like you said, when everybody and their mother got involved with Jake and Briscoe and Mulligan Jr., I mean, they really did a lot in a match that went, like you said, roughly 5.5, 6 minutes.
And I'm glad you said that, too, about he shouldn't even be in this area. And obviously, Mike George, not a familiar name to people in the Mid-Atlantic area unless they read the wrestling magazine. So he was already some of an outsider, even though he's obviously in a fan-favorite position, bumping heads against Sergeant Slaughter. But, you know, Mike George has been there for a while. We know he's not going to be there a whole lot longer, so I'm glad you mentioned that, because now I want to keep an eye on the results and see exactly when Mike George begins to get faded out and how they decide to do that, and if it's at the hands of Sergeant Slaughter and his recruits. Now, we obviously know Sergeant Slaughter and his recruits have been into it hot and heavy with Jake Roberts, with Blackjack Mulligan Jr., and those two gentlemen are joined by Jack Briscoe to end the show with some promos. And as you'll hear, as things kind of fall apart a little bit towards the end of the interview, they did do a little bit of vamping for time. So that's why it does start to kind of fade there a little bit as Bob Cottle calls him back over before everything fades out.
All right, and Jake Roberts,
that's one time they didn't get away now, is it?
That's right.
We're going to start handling the things the same way Slaughter does. He wants to stick his nose in somebody's match. Well, by gosh, that's what we're going to start doing. We'll stick our nose any time the things don't look just kosher to us.
All right, Jack,
Slaughter, you're in trouble,
Jack,
brother.
I tell you, came right back into a wild melee.
Well, I tell you, Jake and Junior here has been telling me all about Sarge and the privates and what they'll do and anything they'll do to try to get a victory and anything they'll do to try to mess somebody up and cripple or hurt somebody. But we mean to tell you that they're not going to get it done.
All right.
That's right. I tell you, Jack Briscoe's stepping right into the heat of things here, and I know that he well knows it. If there's anybody that's as well prepared as anybody, it's Jack Briscoe. So Jack Briscoe and Jake Roberts and myself, they're after Sergeant Slaughter. And Sergeant Slaughter, you got a lot on you, brother, so you better get ready because you got the best after you.
Anytime, anywhere.
I tell you, they all took off, and they were trying in a hurry to get out of that ring when you three guys got in.
They don't like it whenever the odds are even or a little bit better now, do they? That's the way Slaughter operates. That's the way we're going to operate. It's fine with us anytime.
Man, see you next week.
Obviously, I got to cut that off right there because there's no way I'm letting Bob Cottle utter those words and then have that fake music play over Don Ray's Got to Have Love, and won't let it happen, won't let it be done. But you hear at the end there, Jack Briscoe, Blackjack Mulligan Jr., Jake Roberts, once again, putting Sergeant Slaughter in their crosshairs, and we've come to the end of another Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episode. Roman, any thoughts on those interviews, or really on the show itself, and to put a bow on this thing for us?
Well, one thing I noticed, for better or not, there was no mention of the who contributed the most for 1981. I thought for sure they would have put a bow on that thing and been done with it by now. No mention of it, so maybe that'll be coming in the weeks to come. And also, you know, like you mentioned on the last podcast, that Slaughter was not necessarily being phased out, but not being put in a prominent position. And this week, they really paid a lot of attention to Slaughter. He was kind of the focal point or the star of this episode, if you want to call it that. Being fined, attacking guys, cutting promos. Spent a lot of time putting Slaughter in the spotlight, and I think that's a good thing.
2 weeks ago, they said we would have a winner to that contest. 2 weeks ago, and I'm intentionally not looking ahead at the results. Maybe this has got something to do with Piper and Taylor still. I'm not real sure. I'm not 100% sure here. We'll have to see as it goes along here. And hey, maybe they drop it all together. That wouldn't hurt my feelings either. But then again, after all the hell we've had to go through with this thing, I do want it to pay off, and we'll have to see how it kind of pays off down the line. I somehow want to try to think that Ricky Steamboat had something to do with it, but I can't remember. Regardless of that, it's time to get to these results here, because as always, there is a bunch of them from around the circuit. We taped this show on the 24th. On the 25th, on Thursday night, we moved on to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where we don't have any results, but we do have matches in the lineup there. Was Tommy Rich against Ole Anderson, Roddy Piper against Leroy Brown, John Studd and Austin Idol against Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jake Roberts. Also on the 25th at Harrisonburg High School, Ivan Koloff faced off against Jimmy Valiant, while Johnny Weaver faced off against Lord Alfred Hayes in a lumberjack match. Also that night in Sumter, South Carolina, at the Expo Center, Sergeant Slaughter was set to face off against Ricky Steamboat. The next night on Friday in Richmond on the 26th, Sergeant Slaughter defeated Ricky Steamboat, Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson defeated Ray Stevens and Blackjack Mulligan Jr., and Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff by disqualification. Also on the 26th in Charleston, South Carolina, Jake Roberts defeated Big John Studd, while Jay Youngblood and Porkchop Cash defeated the Marines by DQ. The next morning on Saturday the 27th in Knoxville, Tennessee, WBIR Studios, Les Thatcher watched over a taping of NWA Southern Pro Wrestling. That night in Lawrenceville, Virginia, the Privates defeated Jay Youngblood and Porkchop Cash to win the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship belts. As I mentioned last week on the show when they were talking about Carl Fergie and David Patterson as NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship contenders, when it came to those belts, while I don't want to demean them or run them down or talk about them like a prop, as I mentioned earlier on in the show, the reality of the situation was those belts for years and years and years were storyline used belts. Once the NWA World Tag Team Championship became the main titles of the area, really when it came to situations, whether it be with Paul Jones and Ricky Steamboat, or in this case with the Marines, if they had something going on TV and needed to use them, they would use them, but otherwise they would basically be forgotten about or be something that you could defend on house shows. If you go to midatlanticgateway.com, there are interviews with both Carnoodle and Nelson up there where they talk about this night where they won the titles, not having any idea that they were going in there to win them, and then obviously coming out with them. There's another notch in their belt, which we will see them play to the hilt, not only across the Carolinas and Virginia, but actually up into Toronto as well, too, where the Marines more and more become a big-time force. So that's going to be something we'll be keeping an eye on, too, as we continue on here. Also on the 27th in Roanoke, Virginia, Roddy Piper and Austin Idol defeated Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood. Also in Fredericksburg, Virginia that night at Stafford High School, Ivan Koloff faced off against Jimmy Valiant, and yes, there was another Johnny Weaver against Lord Alfred Hayes lumberjack match. Now, when it comes to our next night here on Sunday, March 28th, listed on the Clawmasters websites as being in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, Charlotte was a Saturday night show usually that they had a couple weeks ago. Greensboro here usually would be where they would be at. I could be wrong about this, but it looks like they have the exact same card as was for in Charlotte on the 20th, It looks like that is the same card listed for Greensboro here on the 28th, right down to Ole Anderson, Stan Hansen, and Sergeant Slaughter defeating Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, and Jake Roberts. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeating Austin Idol by DQ, and Jimmy Valiant, Austin, and Ivan Koloff going to a no contest. So I'm not sure what the correct card is for this. Maybe it is. Maybe they just mirrored the show that took place in Charlotte the week before. As I mentioned, this card actually says Charlotte on the Clawmaster's archives, but I believe it to be Greensboro. Somebody out there with some great vision, you know who I'm talking to, Mid-Atlantic Gateway. Give us some clarity on this, as there seems to be a little bit of a ghost in the machine. We'll go right to Monday then in Greenville, South Carolina, where Bob Armstrong defeated Roddy Piper in an Indian strap match, which sounds very, very interesting. The Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a match with Ole Anderson and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. as special referees. And Ole Anderson and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. got into a match themselves where Ole ended up coming out being the victor. Also on that night in Walterboro, South Carolina, Ricky Steamboat faced off against Austin Idol. On the 30th in Raleigh, there was no wrestling that night, but there was wrestling that took place in Hillsboro, North Carolina at Orange High School. Jake Roberts defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ, and Johnny Weaver defeated Lord Alfred Hayes by DQ. That night in Columbia, South Carolina, this is a very interesting show. Now, mentioned, there's no wrestling in Raleigh. You hear what the main matches are out there in Hillsboro. So down in Columbus, South Carolina, this is the lineup. Okay. All right. Roman, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this lineup? Are you awake over
Let's
there?
Let's hear it.
Mike Davis defeats Ben Alexander. Kelly Kaniski defeats Bill White. Porkchop Cash defeats Chris Markoff. I didn't even know Chris Markoff was still there. I guess he was over in Knoxville. I have no idea. But anyway, Terry Taylor and Donna Christianello defeats Big Bill White and Sherry Martel. In the main event, the Fabulous Moolah defeats Judy Martin. I would assume that was for Moolah's World Women's Championship. How do you like those apples?
My first thought when you were reading those, the lineup for that was like, man, was there like a blizzard or did everybody get stuck up in the mountains? Could they not get there? Like, why in the world would you put that card on? That just, there's nothing in that card that makes me, that would make me want to go leave my house and go watch that. Very odd book. You know, you wonder if they just threw 20 names in a hat and whatever comes out, that's the lineup we're going to go with.
That actually takes us back around to the 31st in Charlotte, North Carolina. No question if they're in Charlotte or Greensboro here. They're definitely in Charlotte because they're at WPCQ Studios. And before I get to the preview for next week's show, I have no way to play taps in the background or anything like that. I guess I could, but then that would just be too depressing here. But it is time to now say goodbye, Leroy McGurk's NWA Tulsa office, the long-known Tri-State, now becoming Midwest Championship Wrestling with George Scott going out there trying to save the day. It is all over with as they held their last show on March 24th in Springfield, Missouri. C.V. Offey and Ali Bay went to a draw. Frank Hill defeated El Toro. Bruno Sammartino Jr. and Steve Bolus defeated Sweet Hansen and Rip Hawk. Steve Bolus, Sweet Hansen, and Rip Hawk, for heaven's sakes. Paul Jones defeated Eddie Mansfield, and that was that. That was the last one as the Bill Watts promotion took over Leroy McGurk's promotion. And so that was that, our 3 months of George Scott out there trying to cobble together another territory and possibly extend out Mid-Atlantic's reach all goes by the wayside there. And that was that. Here's the WWE Network preview of April 3rd, 1982's program that we will talk about on next episode. On this edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson take to the ring to compete in a tag team match main event. NWA United States Champion Sergeant Slaughter vows to run Ric Flair out of town, plus Jack Briscoe, Terry Taylor, Jake Roberts, and many more in action. So, Roman, there's what we got set up for next week. And how good, Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen again, so can't complain about that.
No, anytime you can see Hansen and Ole, it's always must-see TV.
And there's always a chance you could see Hansen and Ole if you stop over to our Twitter and our Facebook, where we do On This Day in JCP TV History, where we will run all sorts of cool clips, anything that we can get our hands on that we can get up there in 2 minutes and 20 seconds. That's what makes its way up on Twitter. We can do longer videos in our Facebook group. We have a Facebook, which you can check out that page, although I'll be updating our Facebook group page a lot more, hopefully with some longer videos that I can fit up there, some cool things that are exclusive. Also, hashtag EverydayArn. That's where we post video clips celebrating the greatness that is the enforcer, AA Arn Anderson, from throughout his career. Love to do a couple other hashtags as it goes along here, too, but definitely want to keep up with Everyday Arn. We try to update those every day. Unfortunately, there are some ebbs and flows, but it never goes too long without being updated. So have a little patience with us. We try our best here. Right now, we're just trying to pump out shows. And remember, if you're ever in question about where to find us, midatlanticpod.com. If you're on iTunes or on any service that says that you can rate the show, please rate it 5 stars. They love that sort of stuff. And apparently Brian Last loves that sort of stuff too. So we want to keep him happy because we want to stay around here. The Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. So long, everybody.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.